Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of Browns.
You know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
He was late to shoot around, and that happens with the guy. And you guys like joke with them. You tell him,
"Damn, who said that?"
He
said that. I gotta tell him not to say that. He's tripping.
We didn't even ask him.
Just Yeah. He gotta learn. God,
I gotta tell him not to say that. Learn your cliches. That's DeMar DeRozan. He of the Chicago Bulls. Actually, he is the Chicago Bulls in the fourth quarter. Although Matt Williams had a fourth quarter in overtime. Patrick Williams, he did a thing. The Bulls will play the Heat tonight. The East leading Heat tonight. 6:45's broadcast time. Programming begins then. Before that, on Saturday Suckage, this hour, the guest will be Cody Westerlund talking about the Bulls. And we'll take you right up to, we'll bring you Tony La Russa's interview with Inside the Clubhouse at 1:40 in this hour. Then we'll take you up to Cubs baseball. Matt Spiegel and Elise Menaker will be on the call for the score today, and they'll take you up to the Bulls at 6:45. Joining us on the Score Hotline, presented by Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas, home of the world's largest sports book, is the DeMar DeRozan whisperer, Cody Westerlund. Cody, how you doing?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Doing good. In the standings, the Bulls and Raptors are tied, and the Bulls are listed above them, holding the tiebreaker. However, they're playing the Heat tonight, the Bulls are, and then the Raptors get the Heat tomorrow night. So this is, I guess you say, all right, whatever happens. Cleveland can't catch them. It's unlikely they're going to have happen. Unlikely that it's going to happen. Is load management a problem? Do you play everybody you can tonight? How do you expect this next week to go?
Well, I think the Bulls will continue to play this out normally, other than maybe they have a back-to-back on Tuesday and Wednesday against the Bucks and then Celtics at home. If the Bulls feel like they're somehow kind of locked into the sixth seed range or something, maybe you rest Zach LaVine on the second of the back-to-back here in the middle of the week. But otherwise, I think the Bulls will play it out pretty normally because they need to get rhythm, right? Chemistry with this group that hasn't played well enough. And they can only do that with everyone playing as healthy as they can possibly be. And right now, they are basically fully healthy other than Zach's knee acts up sometimes. And then obviously Lonzo Ball is still out for him, but Pat Williams is back doing a little bit more. So I expect the Bulls to play this out pretty normally and keep trying to push for the five seed if they can. But I mean, if you're asking me right now, Bulls and Raptors are tied. Bulls have the tiebreaker, but the Raptors have a little bit easier schedule. They end the year with games against the Rockets and Knicks, who they should be able to take care of if they need to and want to. So you're looking at the Bulls right now, 5 or 6 seed. Probably that's what we got to sort out with 5 games left in the regular season.
Cody, we were talking earlier about the fact that this is probably where the Bulls... let me back up for a second. Going into the season, we were thinking this is about where the Bulls are going to be, the 5 or 6 seed, and avoid the play-in would be a success. Is that still the case, considering the fact that they spent so much time in first place in the East?
Yeah, I still view this season as a success if the Bulls as we expect, avoid the play-in, and it would take an absolute huge collapse by the Bulls to fall behind the Cavs at this point with five games to play and essentially a four-game lead when you consider the tiebreaker. So I think this season's been progress for the organization. I think as fans, as observers, media members, everyone across the NBA watching, like, we're prisoners of the moment sometimes. We have recency bias, and the Bulls built it was a little bit of a house of cards at times when they were in first place, right? Like, they had a five-game winning streak right before the All-Star break against pretty bad teams, and they were winning by 4 to 7 points, and DeMar DeRozan was going for, like, 40 points every night, shooting, like, 16 of 24, and he was just outrageously good. If he had been slightly worse, they could have lost a couple of those games. They would have been more in that 3 or 4 mix in a bunched-up East all year. So I don't get too distracted by the fact that they were in first place. I think it's a success organizationally to get back to the playoffs. And if they can go out there and have a competitive series, I think that would mean a lot for some of these young guys. And even guys like Zach LaVine, who hasn't been in the playoffs before, like, getting out there is important. Having a chance in big games and big moments is important for this team. And I'm a little bit more optimistic on this team, I think, than maybe some others are lately. And not because I think they're going to win a first-round series, but I still think they'll get in a first-round series and be really competitive, hard-fought series, and they'll probably lose in the first round. But I think that is important for an organization. So I don't get lost too much in the fact that they were in first place earlier in the season and around Christmas and New Year's or anything, because this was never going to be a championship team, even though at times it felt like they had played games at a level in which they could beat some of the best teams in the NBA.
Our guest is Cody Westerlund. He covers the Bulls for The Score. You're listening to Saturday Suckage right here on Chicago Sports Radio 670. And for all the ups and downs and the roller coaster year that it has been, that this feels about right, given this team one of the biggest, maybe the biggest accomplishment was that the fear of DeRozan and LaVine playing my turn basketball turned into the dynamic duo in the fourth quarter, and they could play together, they could play off each other. That was spectacular. And the difference that Lonzo Ball and Alex Caruso made, you saw Caruso's coming back. So how's Caruso's back? And if you're talking load management, that could be an important part of it as well. And what will that lineup look like what's your best lineup if Caruso's back, is healthy, and what do you do if it's not?
Well, I think if Caruso is good to go and healthy, and right now it's more of an injury to manage for him rather than something that they're worried about sidelining it for the postseason or anything like that. It just acts up on him in games sometimes. But I think moving Caruso back to point guard and putting Patrick Williams in at power forward at some point could be the best option for the Bulls, because Io DeSumo's kind of hit a rookie wall when the Bulls start Alex Caruso kind of as that power forward. In some ways, it's a really small lineup, and teams can take advantage of that as good as Caruso is defensively. Like, I just think they need a little bit bigger body out there with Patrick Williams. And after his good game against the Clippers on Thursday evening, in which he played a career high nearly 37 minutes, like, his conditioning's getting really close to being normal, what you would expect out of him. And he looked good and closed that game well for the Bulls, so that was a good sign. I think the move at some point is to put Patrick Williams back in the starting lineup. I don't know if the Bulls are quite there yet, but they've recently moved Javonte Green out of the starting lineup and gone with that Io and Caruso both out there on the court together, because Billy's wanted that small lineup to kind of exploit teams offensively and take some of the ball handling pressure off Caruso in the half court. But when the playoffs roll around at some point, I think you need a little bit bigger guy against these best playoff teams. So that would be what I would do. I mean, at this point, like, I think the Bulls are more worried about Lonzo Ball than maybe Alex Caruso injury-wise, because, like, Caruso's, like, always banged up, right, guys? Like, it's a foot injury. He's yes. falling on the floor. He's hitting his head. He's rolling over. Like, Alex Caruso having something that is sore is, like, just inherently built into him as a player. And sometimes you don't know, like, how much pain he's actually in. So they didn't start him in the second half the other night because they were a little mindful of not wanting Marcus Morris to post him up five times or something and bang him under the basket. And they started Patrick Williams when he was playing well in the
I think we lost Cody.
No. No. Was it Io who cut him off?
I don't know. I think All we right. lost him. I'll have to call him. Hold on.
Try to get him back. Cody Westerlund is our guest. We're talking Bulls. Bulls and Heat tonight. 6:45, Chuck's pregame. As they face off, the Bulls are facing the best team in the East, or at least the team leading the East. Milwaukee's still the best team in the East. You'll hear that on the score, 6:45, with Chuck, and on 670, the score. And
Cody's back.
We will let Cody finish that thought or sentence or whatever he wants to do.
I'm sorry, Rosie. I don't even know where I left off there.
Well, you're basically debating the Io hitting a wall is a wonderful point. It would be so great if Lonzo were back because you'd have everybody in their regular roles. And you're right. Caruso is the team bruise. His team colors are black and blue. And he's just that guy. And something's always hurting him. But when you see him, he can't start the second half. He's wearing a back brace. He's like, he's Monty Python's Black Knight. And at some point, you're going to lose. You're going to be dismembered, and you'll be game, but you can't move.
We'll call it a draw.
Yes. So that's what scares me, Cody.
Yeah, and I mean, injuries have plagued the Bulls all year. Yeah. But really, at this point, everyone's had them, right? So, like, I'm not viewing these injuries really as an excuse for the Bulls in any way, because with Zach, too, I think that's why it might be wise to sit him out on the back-to-back on Wednesday if there's not too much playoff seeding at stake. But, like, he's been really explosive on offense sometimes, and you can tell he does have that trust in his knee. Now, I think his defense has lagged a little bit on that end here in the last couple months since he had that knee injury in January. But at the same time, like, for the most part, these guys that are out there are about as healthy as they can be. So I still think I'm going to hold them to the high standard, other than the fact that it's trending that obviously they're not going to have Lonzo Ball in the playoffs.
That's what I was going to ask there, Cody, is where do you think, when, I should say, do you think Lonzo Ball plays at some, do you think he's going to play at all this season? Because we saw this last week, he's starting to try to ramp back up after this small setback, whatever you want to call it, he had. So what are you thinking there? Are we going to see Lonzo Ball at all the rest of the season?
My guess would be no, and that's because essentially everything would have to go perfectly for Lonzo Ball to return right now for the Bulls, and this just hasn't been a situation in which everything's going perfectly for him. Anytime you get shut down for 10 days like he did recently, like, that's a big setback, you know? So he had that knee surgery in late January. They thought he would be back by the end of the regular season, but he just has not responded well, cannot do sprinting, can't do cutting yet. So their hope is basically today, tomorrow, stuff like that, is that he starts working back toward that at full speed work. But I'm just not seeing it. I mean, if you're hoping for a best case scenario here, it would be that he's cleared, I think, maybe for sprinting by the end of this week, and you get him in the regular season finale against the Timberwolves for a few minutes, and then you'd have 4 or 5 days of practice before the playoffs start. You'd have that off week. Maybe, but it's rough. I'm just not seeing it. I think it feels like Lonzo really wants to play, and right now it kind of feels like the Bulls are just going to exhaust every resource for their mental health and his mental health to know that they did everything they could. But it's just not trending, it doesn't feel like, right now, in a good direction, unless he's really going to have a breakthrough today, tomorrow, and Monday in many ways, I think.
Cody Westerlund is, I guess, covers the Bulls for The Score. That's the radio station you're listening to, Saturday Suckage. Speaking of suckage, I straighten me out here. Help me out here. Make me smarter, Cody. I don't know how you can play Nikola Vucevic at the end of a game, at end of a game that you want to win. He does not. He seems to be the target, the object of every pick and roll. They don't defend it very well. He's worse than most. And you traded a bunch of people. It looks like a disaster when you trade that much for a guy who can't close a game. When I look at Wendell Carter Jr. and think he could play the end of the game more likely than Vucevic could. So, makes sense to me.
You're picking on our guy Vooch.
Well, I'm just picking on a guy who seems to be the guy everybody else is picking on in the NBA.
Yeah, that's what good teams do. Like, they target those guys. They're always going to find someone out there. And let me tell you right now, if they're not going to target Vooch at the end of games, they could probably just go target DeMar DeRozan. You know what I mean?
So is this sort of like being the Twitter person of the day? You don't want to be that.
You don't want your name to be trending. And when Vooch is out there, DeMar's name doesn't always trend as much defensively because they put him in the pick and roll. So, I mean, he's going to close games. I could see Tristan Thompson coming in for some offense-defense subs for Vooch when there are dead balls and Billy has enough timeouts to use late in the game. I could even see Patrick Williams obviously getting playing time as a five in some certain situations. So I think for the most part, Vooch is going to be in the closing lineup. When there's 3 minutes left in a game and it's a two-point contest in the playoffs, I expect Vooch to be in there. But you're right. Like, there are a lot more strategical decisions that need to be made here in a playoff setting because there's no tomorrow. And you're playing better teams, and you're playing teams that game plan better and commit to a game plan better than they do just on a random January Wednesday evening at the United Center coming off a back-to-back or something. So, yeah, I mean, we've already seen it a little bit. Billy Donovan with offense-defense substitute here. I think he worked Javonte Green in and out of the lineup late on Thursday in some moments just because of his energy and ability to fly around the court and defend a little bit more in a pick-and-roll setting. But yeah, it's rough. Like, the Bulls need Vooch, though. Like, I don't think this team is good enough offensively late in games against good teams if Vooch isn't on the floor, right? Like, I think these teams can take away way too much if it's just DeMar, Zach, and then, like, Io's out there, Caruso and Tristan Thompson or something, or Pat Williams instead of Tristan Thompson. Like, there's really no number three option in that situation for the Bulls in a half-court setting. So I think that's why Vooch probably has to play for the offensive reasons, or that Bulls offense is really going to bog down in the playoffs.
Well, we will see how it plays out. I suspect we'll know more later in the week to the point where Zach can get that rest you were talking about, which would at least give you hope that they could win a game or two. I don't know any team out there they can beat, but
yeah, I mean, the one good thing for the Bulls is there's no back-to-backs in the playoffs, right? And you could have two days between some of your games. So maybe Zach's feeling really good in a playoff setting would be the hope.
Cody, thanks for your time. Thanks for the knowledge. We appreciate it.
Yep. You guys have a good rest of your day.
You too. Cody, read him after the Bulls play. The Heat tonight coverage on The Score. This radio station, 670 AM.
It's us.
We are. It is. It is.
We're The Score.
It is. Not you and me, not Saturday Suckage, but it is us, 670 The Score, 645 Chuck's pregame. So we'll take a break. Later on in this hour, we will replay the interview. Tony La Russa came in and sat down with Bruce Levine and David Haw on Inside the Clubhouse and talked about the trade that they made to get a corner outfielder with whom Tony is intimately familiar and infinitely complimentary about, and what it means in terms of, I don't know, pretty shiny things like World Series rings, perhaps. So we'll talk about that before we get to Tony Russa. And also, I think I came across, are you much of an April Fool's guy?
Not really. I guess I probably was in a younger life, but not really so much anymore.
Right. I'm not much of that either, but I do have a great appreciation for somebody who pulls off something like April Fool's can end now after what I saw yesterday. So we'll share that with the Trash Panda. And I think you need to update us again on Sweet Alice and Shooter, because Trash Panda is not just it's not just a name that happened to be given out. It was earned and it continues to be earned. And our friend Julie Swyka sent us a trash can that reminded us all of that. So we'll share that. Next, it's your Saturday Suckage. Steve Rosenblum, Trash Panda, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland you know, think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns.
You know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Yeah. April Fool's was yesterday.
It's one of my favorite Simpsons scenes, by the way.
They're all your favorites. I mean, what is this one of my favorites? It's all you do is retweet
quote
of the day.
Yeah, like I've had a long running joke with one of my friends that, and he feels the same way. If you asked me to make a list of my top five favorite Simpsons episodes, the list would be about 15 episodes long.
I just assumed it would be all of them because that's the way it works.
Everything before season 13 or 14 or so, yeah.
Okay, where does Mighty Homer at the Bat?
Oh, that's really high up there.
Yeah.
That would legitimately be top five.
Yeah. Okay. We passed that. We didn't. I had written down. We need to mark that down and talk about it. And we didn't. And that's your fault. I blame you. Trash Panda.
Yeah, my bad.
Yeah. He's Trash Panda. I'm Steve Rosenblum. Mark Rohde was on the show. He is on the show. He was on the show. He's not on the show now. He was driving out for a. The idea that Mark told us he was driving out for a sub sandwich and he was joining us on the air to spare him the misery suckage of having to listen to us prompted this from a texter, 224 texter. Grody can't be bothered to host the show because he's driving to Addison to get a sandwich. I'm calling Chunga.
I don't even know what Chunga? What is that? Is that a made up word? Can we say that? I don't know.
Oh, my God. You don't know who Chunga is your brand manager here at the Score.
Oh, it's a nickname I wasn't aware of. Okay.
Chunga was the name of the, back when Chunga was you as a producer.
Oh.
It was for Kevin Matthews.
Wow, that's a deep cut.
He was, yeah, that is. That's old timers day right there. So you call Chunga. He'll be happy to hear from you. And I thought that was just...
I'm just struggling with the idea of going all the way to Addison for a sandwich. There's plenty of sandwich shops here in the city.
I think it had probably something to do with a friend.
Well, he can come here.
Yeah. You don't want to come into the war zone that is the city of Chicago. What do you got? Unless you got Kevlar vest, you can't come into the city of Chicago.
That's a fair point.
The Tech Zone, by the way, is brought to you by Rosen Hyundai of Algonquin. Save time. Shop online at rosenhyundai.com. So we came in with the Simpsons April Fool's thing. I'm not much of April Fool's and all the jokes and just naturally disbelieve everything that happened. But I really respected this. It is Executive Order number 104. It's drawn up. And you know it's official because it has a whole bunch of wherefores, therefores, whereases. So, I will read this to you. Whereas on June 27th, 1935, the New Jersey legislature designated the American goldfinch as the official state bird. And whereas it is important for state symbols to reflect New Jersey's culture and values. And whereas New Jersey drivers are famous for their skills, enthusiasm, and expressive hand gestures, now, therefore, I, Philip D. Murphy, governor of the state of New Jersey, by virtue of the authority vested in me by the Constitution and by the statutes of this state, do hereby order and direct the following. One, the state bird is hereby changed from the American goldfinch to the middle finger. It goes on. It goes on. It shall be the duty of every person or entity in this state or doing business in this state and of the members of the governing body and every official, employee, or agent of every political subdivision in this state and of each member of all other governmental bodies, agencies, and authorities in this state of any nature whatsoever to cooperate fully in all matters concerning this order. Three, happy April Fools.
That's hilarious.
He declared the state bird, the governor of Missouri, Governor Murphy. I love that guy.
This just gave me actually a really good idea for a prank. So if you have one of these proclamations like that, make a really long one that just keeps using all those, you know, proclamation words.
And therefore,
and just keeps going and never actually gets to anything. Right. I think that would be a really good prank to send out to media members or something. I would appreciate that.
We've got to protect our phony baloney jobs, gentlemen. Yeah. So that was it. And and so we have an update. Sweet Alice had an update on Shooter for Trash Panda.
Yeah. I was talking to her last night, and my dad was trying to shoot a raccoon out of my old bedroom window. So he didn't get it, though. So if anyone's concerned,
this really goes on the transparent nature of your family that she's going to call.
Well, she didn't call me just to tell me that.
She wasn't going to call and not tell you.
Well, yeah, she texted me that before we had our phone conversation.
So, right. She made a point of that.
She made a point to tell me.
And Shooter was aiming at some raccoons, and how's his aim?
Apparently last night, not that good. I guess he's out of practice. He didn't get it. So, you missed. Get it. I can't blame him. I'm out of practice, too.
This was... Our friend Julie Swyka sent me a text photo where she went into a place and saw a trash can with a picture of a trash panda on it. And it's a beautiful thing. It's not quite the Rocket City Trash Pandas minor league team,
Okay, so this just reminded me. Did you see the picture that Shane posted yesterday of the fellow that wandered up to their... When they were doing the show at Vegas, the one that preempted us, there was a fellow that walked up wearing a Trash Panda shirt. He had just an incredible getup. I gotta go back and find it. He was wearing like knee-high socks, I think with knee-high socks with shorts with like swim trunks that are just, you know, like ugly colored swim trunks, something I would wear, and a Trash Panda shirt, a Rocket City Trash Panda shirt,
our guy,
and sunglasses and a hat. Oh, I'm going to be this guy for Halloween. He looked heroic.
Oh my God. The only thing missing would have been if he had the like suspenders from the socks that you get the things to hold up your socks that go to your belt. Oh my God.
I gotta scroll back and find this picture now.
And so a texture here is having me, did you have to explain to Parkinson Spiegel? But it wasn't Parkinson Spiegel. They were in Vegas, but last time it was Spiegel and Bernstein, right?
Yeah, I had to explain to them. Actually, I explained to Danny the day before that, and then Dan and Spiegs on Saturday. On Friday, whatever, it doesn't matter. One of the days, I explained to everyone on the show at some point why I'm called Trash Panda.
Right.
And Dan was more concerned about the fact that I'd spent time shooting birds, because, you know, he's a big bird guy. I was like, Dan, I didn't get a chance to tell him this, so we moved on. I was like, Dan, they're nuisance animals where I grew up. You know, like that's the blackbirds are all over the place down there. They're a nuisance. You got to get rid of them.
815 mom says, stop shooting raccoons.
Well, they didn't get shot. He missed. So
nice. Nice. Okay. I just want
to. Again, though, they're nuisance animals down there. They get on the porch, they get in the garden.
They're varmints. All right. We're going to take a break. When we come back, Tony La Russa, White Sox manager, was on the day after the trade in which the Sox dumped Craig Kimbrell on the Dodgers and got back a quality hitter, quality outfielder, quality player, a former champion, AJ Pollock. So we're going to take a break. and then we will close out the show. We will take you up to Cubs baseball. Cubs baseball will be your play-by-play team, and color analyst will be Matt Spiegel and Elise Menaker. You'll hear them at 1:55, Cubs and Angels. Before that, inside the clubhouse, Bruce Levine, David Haw. They interviewed Tony La Russa. We'll take a break when we come back with that. Steve Rosenblum, Trash Panda. Trash Panda. Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. Oh, my God. Text from Las Vegas local, 702 Texter. I saw the Trash Panda shirt guy. It's on my Twitter feed. It's on Trash Panda's Twitter feed at Trisler Studs. Oh, my God. That's a look. All right.
Halloween costume.
Thanks, Trash Panda, for riding shotgun. And apparently Shooter Shotgun missed the raccoons. We'll get to that. I want to thank Scott Merck at MLB.com and Mark Rohde for not being on Mark Rohde's show, and Cody Weschelin for being on the show. Everyone who listened and called and texted and made it up, here's Tony La Russa from inside the clubhouse this morning on The Score.
Tony La Russa, our next guest, is on the guest hotline presented by Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas, home of the world's largest sports book. Good morning, Tony. How are you?
Well, I'm looking forward to this night game that we have a chance to play in against the Diamondbacks, and they're going to honor Roland Heaven, so it's going to be a special day.
What a great occasion. Yeah, that is terrific that they will honor Roland Heaven. And Tony, we are talking about the trade that was made yesterday. A.J. Pollock joins your team, and Bruce and I have been talking the first hour about just how he fits in. Left field, right field, you have the luxury of depth in the outfield. How do you see A.J. Pollock being used best?
Well, I like that. He's a quality pro. I had the good fortune of being in Arizona with him during my time there. So I know, when in those years, it was he and Paul Goldsmith were the leaders on that team. And then he goes to L.A. where he's been part of the playoffs, every year, and including a world championship. He's a solid defensive player. He's got tools. He runs well. He's got a good arm. When he makes contact, the ball is alive off his bat. So he's playing tonight. He's going to play right field in our game against the Diamondbacks. And, one thing about outfielders, it's not like if you bring in an extra first baseman or second baseman. There's only one of them, but there are three outfielders, and this really gives us some protection where, we can have some guys that if somebody gets a little sore, we have the depth to handle it.
Tony, pleasure having you on this morning. Thanks for taking the time out. David and I appreciate it. When you look at your DH situation, you have the luxury of having some really great hitters to choose from, and you also have the luxury of moving people around and getting the best out of them as far as getting them in that role and then maybe DHing to save their legs. What is the balance that you look at there? How challenging is that for a manager who has very good players at multiple positions on a team?
Well, I remember from my previous experience in the American League, and then it was, you go in the National League and it's not the same. Now I came back last year. You don't sometimes have a choice because sometimes you have such a, an overwhelming kind of DH that he needs to play to be part of that lineup, and he's not really a defensive player. And I can give you a couple, three examples. You would know who they are too, but the one that works best for a team is a situation like ours, where you can use that DH as a half a day off for Abreu. In our club, too, I remember the second half of the year when Yaz came back. I mean, he was one of our most productive hitters. So when he wasn't catching, he was able to DH. And the same thing would be true like Eloy. You can get him off his feet. So when you can manipulate that the DH spot to keep guys in the lineup without giving them a full day off when they're getting, and maybe they're a little sore or they're, just fatigued, it's really an asset to the club. And that's, we'll just pay attention. A guy like Jose, wants to be in there every day at first base, but every once in a while, the DH makes sense. So we just will rotate it.
Joined by White Sox manager Tony La Russa here on Inside the Clubhouse, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. Tony, that was good news when you made the trade yesterday for A.J. Pollock. The bad news was that Garrett Crochet, the power lefty, he is going to undergo Tommy John surgery, out for this season. He has special stuff. He is a guy that was developing nicely. How do you replace a guy with stuff that seems irreplaceable?
Well, I'm gonna back up on stride and let you know that Craig Kimbrel is a really special, not just talent, but a special teammate. And I knew him in Boston. I saw him firsthand. And he could not have been better with us as a teammate. He came in ready, trying to do everything he could to help us. I think it was a brilliant move by Rick in the front office and Kenny, to add that kind of potential. I think the deeper we got into the playoffs, his value would have shown itself. But when you start the season new, it really is a difficult position when you've been a closer with him. He's got real good credentials to be a Hall of Fame guy. So I just want fans to know that this is a very special guy. But in our situation, man, you try to put him in position to succeed. And it'd be very difficult. And he would have handled it the best he could, but I just wish him the best. We all wish him the best with the Dodgers. Now, at the same time, this game can be brutal at times with the breaks that that a player or pitcher has to go through, and that's what happened to Garrett. It was very difficult in the clubhouse after the game. And he was torn up. So we all got together yesterday and we talked about it. And it's a lot like when Eloy got hurt in spring training last year. That our focus, number one, is on Garrett and making sure that he knows that we're behind him and he's a part of everything that we do. And the one good thing about him, he's a young guy, and he gets this thing taken care of. You remember in 2020 he had some soreness there, and so this probably was going to happen at some point, and it happens now. So he can have the surgery, he can do the rehab, and he can come back, with a brand new tendon there, and have a lot of years of a great career. So we're all very supportive. We want him to be around as much as possible. But at the same time, the games count, and we're going to have to fill that spot, with somebody else, and we'll figure it out. We'll do it. We're deep enough to make it work, but we're going to miss Garrett.
Tony, managing in the age of social media and Twitter, you had to come out and talk about how you have always been supportive of the White Sox fans, and I remember that going back to your first time with them, and even very respectful as you were always when you were an opposing manager. But how is it different now, having to respond to social media as a manager and opinions of people when they think that you've said one thing and you really have meant another?
I think the best thing is that you don't respond. There's a lot of issues in the first season, and whenever it was personal, I just ignored it because there's nothing you can do about it except do your job, it's just a reality. People have opinions, and they're welcome to their opinions. But when it goes to something that involves someone else, like if a social media comment had something to do between about my relationship with a player, for example, that I know is not true, I'd speak up. In this case, this issue about me disrespecting our White Sox fans and being rude, that really bothered me because that is totally 100% the opposite of what I feel. I felt it when I was here before. Whenever I come back to town and I would see White Sox fans, they knew I was part of the family, and I am very excited to be back and hopefully make them happy and be part of a team that gets to October again and goes as far as we can go. So for me to list and read that, I meant to disrespect them, no. What I tried to say was anytime you have an issue come up where people want somebody to add people to your team, you want the clubhouse to know that you believe, the coaching staff and you believe, and the organization believes that we can win with what we have. And that's what I meant. I meant that I think the White Sox fans know that we're going to do the best we can with what we have, and it also means the front office. And they think they're working hard to make moves, but there's 29 other teams that are trying to make moves too. So, you know, we don't get distracted about, hey, what if this guy or what if that guy gets traded aside? That's not how we operate. And what I meant more than anything else was if people think we need another player or a pitcher or something, it's not, you know, that they don't have the White Sox mentality that, you know, we go with what we got.
Tony, I was more intrigued by something two of your players said this week rather than some fans. And in The Athletic, Ken Rosenthal quoted Liam Hendricks and Lucas Giolito as talking about the role complacency played in the second half kind of slide last year, if you want to call it that. You guys weren't as good in the second half as you were in the first. And as somebody who is known for his edge, as somebody as competitive as you are, I wondered how you interpreted those comments coming from your players.
Well, I respect those guys. I mean, the thing that we talked about last year, and I would mention it now, you know, these are, I say it all the time, you know, men, not machines. It, you know, it's human nature to have to fight to keep your edge. And, you know, we had the big lead. You know, we kept having some issues with people that we were losing, but then we got the big outfielders back. But the one I would say to him was that overall, we fought through that, and we had a winning record every month of the 2021 season. That is really hard to do unless you're very relentless. And even in the second half, we, you know, here and there, you know, we were not, maybe didn't push it as hard. We still managed to get the wins to stay ahead of the Central. And in the end, you know, we really looked at having the lead the last two or three weeks to say, okay, if you're sore, rest, don't play. If you're tired, rest, don't play. But when you play, we got to play. And we wanted the club made the decision. They wanted to finish strong. And I know in 2020, you know, they struggled. And I think, you know, we won, you know, we were like 6-1 or somebody was 7 out of the last 10 going into the playoffs. So, you know, I just think it's a normal kind of issue when you get far ahead. There's a tendency that you can lose an edge, and we fought it and we handled it decently. But it's also, I agree with the guys, you know, it's something we can learn for. I remember in Boston, you know, they won like 100-some games because you keep pushing, and it's a good lesson for us. First of all, we got to get to that place where, you know, we're really doing well, and then we keep pushing.
Tony La Russa joining us on Inside the Clubhouse for just a few more minutes. And interesting, Tony, you and I were talking in the backfield a couple days ago, and, you know, there's a lot of...
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah, you're seeing exactly,
you know,
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland,
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of Browns.
You know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.